Taylor Swift sings a catchy song that actually advocates kids pursuing their crushes by waiting at your back door because you belong to me. That might be called stalking. Singer Robin Thicke has been known to blur the line between seeking consent and sexual abuse with lyrics like, "I know you want it." So the question arises, just how toxic is our culture when it comes to how men treat women? Has America created an aura of sexual violence, and are way too many men just too caught up in it? Too often, the message from our singers and rappers centers around more about abuse than healthy relationships. Here to talk about all this are Jeff Buckley. He's director of We End Violence Workshops, and he's co-president of the San Diego Domestic Violence Council. He speaks on the UMKC campus tonight. Jeff, nice to have you. Welcome to Kansas City.
Thank you.
Dr. Joe Williams is also with us. He's a psychology professor at UMKC and the director of the Stress and Trauma Evaluation and Prevention Science Laboratory. Joe, nice to have you too. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, as men, Jeff, what motivated you to study sexual violence to begin with?
I was motivated into the work by the other director of We End Violence, Carol Mosley. She, when I was a senior in college, came and gave a presentation to a group that I was in, and she made a very clear point that men, you know, had a stake in this game, that it was meaningful to us, and that we needed men to get involved in the process of preventing it. And she made this really cogent, beautiful argument, and I walked up to her at the end, and I said, "Great, Carol, I'm like, I want to get involved. Where are the guys?
Sign me up. Yeah.
Sign me up." And mm-hmm. she went, "Well, there really aren't that many. There's one other guy who might want to get Men Against Rape started again on our campus." And I remember being confused but also kind of angry that I was like, you just made the most thoughtful argument I've ever heard as to why men should be involved, and now you're telling me that we aren't?
Yeah.
And so that was a woman who was invested in the topic is who motivated me in.
Joe, how about you?
Well, prior to coming to Kansas City, I was previously at the National Crime Victims Research and Treatment Center at the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston. And while there, I joined a task force that was started by Chief Mullen, who was the chief of police in the city of Charleston for the city of Charleston PD. And the task force consisted of myself, some other people from our clinic, and some folks from a couple of area campuses that were in the Charleston community. And that task force was organized with the intent of trying to address the real issue of sexual violence and rape on college campuses. And kind of like what Jeff was saying, I was asked to join because there was really an issue where there weren't a lot of men who were involved. And so I was asked to step in. And that really kind of changed my thinking and my, in many ways, my career and what I do with my professional
just
life.
Just the lack of men you saw as an issue that needed to be addressed. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes.
Even for both of you here, it sounds like. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I travel all over the country, and I mean, I can't tell you how many times I walk in, especially at the community level, that if men aren't basically mandated into a room, if they're not athletes who are forced into a training, if men aren't forced into a room, then the ratio of men to women or women to men in the room is usually 3, 4, 5 to 1.
Yeah.
And that's alarming when I think about who perpetrates most acts of violence, when I think about how many men are affected by it, when their friends and loved ones are affected by these things. So,
you know, and Joe, there's this ugly term out there that gets kicked around a lot, and that's the term rape culture. What is it, and does this country have one?
Well, the term rape culture, I think, has been used by a number of different people over the years, but I think that fundamentally, rape culture is a culture where both men and women come to accept rape and sexual assault as an inevitable part of daily life. And when I say that, I think that oftentimes when we talk about sexual assault and rape in particular, what comes to mind for many people is kind of the idea of stranger rape, where somebody uses a weapon or physical force to force someone into a sexual act against their will without their consent.
But in fact, that's not the reality.
In contrast to that, quite often, most rapes and sexual assaults are committed by friends, acquaintances, family members who are known to potential victims, who are using things like alcohol and drugs, coercion, or other kind of things to get someone to have sexual intercourse against their will.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of listeners are going to be surprised we don't have a woman on the show today. Jeff, tell us why this is a man's issue as well. Reiterate the point here a little bit.
I think first your listener's concern about that is okay. I think that we would want to acknowledge the fact that women have been at the forefront of bringing these issues to light for generations.
Yeah.
And that I think it's great to have men talk about it, but I think that we've got to acknowledge and continue to support yeah. women in their work. You know, when I think of – you asked the question about rape culture and what men's investment in this is, and I think about you know, rape culture, and I would agree with Joa, but I would also say – I would add on to that in my work, I would say that it's a – rape culture is an environment that allows sexual predators to feel emboldened. It's one in which they feel
Good
like
point.
They can do what they do. And we know from a decent body of research that they that many sexual predators think what they're doing may not be acceptable to everyone, but that a lot of people would agree with their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is disgusting. One that not just the belief, but that we would allow them to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about like men's engagement, most men don't think that sexually assaulting someone while they're unconscious is acceptable behavior. I'd also say most men don't think that bragging about your sexual conquests, even if those conquests involve, we'll just say, sketchy or shady behavior to get access to that person. That most men don't actually support that kind of behavior, and that we've been trained in a sense to put on a front.
Mm-hmm.
And so the predator in the room hears us talk about it. You were talking about song lyrics. So when, you know, Blurred Lines is on, when Taylor Swift is singing, I mean, like, and it's not just popular music. I mean, every breath you take, every move you make, every bond you break, every step mm-hmm. you take, I'll mm-hmm. be watching you sing mm-hmm. Sting of the Police. So mm-hmm. it permeates our culture. And so when men spend time with each other and we talk about things like sex, when we talk about things like relationships, when we talk about sexual conquest, and we aren't honest about what we're actually feeling, what we really think, without realizing it, a lot of us are complicit in fueling the ideology of a sexual predator who's in the room and going, got it.
Is there anything happening in our society that's sort of changed that would allow men to open up more about what you're talking about here? Because I'm not sensing there's any great shift going on out there.
Well, I've been doing this work for about 15 years, and I would say that in my career, I have seen a shift.
Mm-hmm.
It is small. But it is real and meaningful. When I started this work, groups like Men Against Rape were rather rare on college campuses. They are not as rare anymore. I think there's a lot of space for men to get involved, and there are a lot of men doing this work all over the country. So
mm-hmm.
it's not as if we're not visible, or not part of the movement, I should say. We're usually over visible when we do the work. Is there room for men to get involved? Yeah. Is there space in the culture for this to change? Yes. And I think
yeah.
a lot of that comes from when we as guys acknowledge that we're tired of pretending to be the not nice people that we aren't rather than the nice people that we are. That we're,
yeah.
we're tired of putting a mask on that fronts this kind of masculinity that I mean, so many young men grow up wearing, and it leads to trauma in our own lives. We don't
yeah.
heal
mm-hmm.
ourselves. I mean, how many people listening to this program have known a man who was hurt or injured or sick and wouldn't go get help?
Yeah.
And wouldn't ask for help. And that's that mask of masculinity, which is unhealthy for everyone.
You know, Joe, I'm really struck that here in Missouri, we're seeing a campaign led nationally by one of our U.S. senators, Claire McCaskill, who has really taken the whole notion of campus sexual assault, put it on her back and said, we're going to talk about this and we're going to talk about it very directly. And she's influencing all kinds of new behaviors on college campuses, including UMKC, new videos, new focus on Title IX, new awareness out there that I haven't seen before. How big of a change is that?
I think it's a really big change.
Yeah.
And it's a change that has started to emerge over the last decade or so. I think there's been a lot of research come out that's really helped us try to look a little more closely at how we can address these issues
yeah.
on college campuses and college campuses in particular. I think part of that shift is that we've realized that we can reach out to many more people. We can reach out to men all across campuses to try to get them involved in these issues, and that's because of kind of a shift in the way we think about prevention.
Yeah.
Over the last, 10 years or so, I think one of the real advancements that we've made in the way we think about prevention is teaching people how to recognize the precursors to sexual violence, recognize mm-hmm. the signs that sexual violence actually occurs, recognize what rape culture looks like, and then give them the skills to help them realize, how can I intervene and say something to take that mask off, as Jeff pointed out.
Yeah.
And something that's been called bystander intervention. We've seen a lot more of that. And that's really kind of revolutionized, I think, how campuses are responding to this issue.
Well, here's a trillion-dollar question, it seems to me. Is what we're talking about here, sexual violence among men, is this an evolutionary problem or a societal problem, a cultural problem, if you will, Jeff?
That's an interesting question. There are some people who would certainly argue that it's part of an evolutionary psychology. I would not be in that camp. I think there may be a certain amount of sexual assault or sexual violation that may be inevitable. But I think, as Joe was saying a moment ago, we are at a really critical juncture right now. What the changes that Claire McCaskill and others like her have been fighting for are fundamentally changing our dialogue. And I think that if we double our efforts right now, I think it's completely realistic to assume we could cut sexual assaults in half on college campuses within the next 10 to 15 years.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
I think that's absolutely achievable. And certainly that we could be providing and getting support to people who go through it more effectively and efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to think about where we're going is to think about where we are. We're changing the conversation. We're changing the dialogue, and I think that's where our focus needs to be, is doubling our efforts there, so that we don't have to deal with this problem anymore. As to whether it's a cultural problem, of course it's a cultural problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely, it's a cultural problem. I mean, there are lots of things we learn in our culture, and gender norms is very much a part of culture, and it's not all unhealthy. But we've got to have some conversations about when it is, and mm-hmm. not make that about guys can't be guys and girls can't be girls, but rather let's say like everyone can be their healthiest version of self.
Yeah.
And that's a cultural conversation we are desperately in need of.
I'm just wondering about how young men develop their own identities these days so that it's respectful toward women, but still can be seen as attractive to their peers in a world, Joa, that is so much about peer pressure and all that kind of stuff. Where do we go there? What's happening to really focus on younger men, 12, 14, 15 years old, and getting them on the right track?
Yeah. Well, I want to take a step back for a second, I think, and kind of echo some of what Jeff was saying that I think is really important here, in that for young men maybe who are 12, 13, 14, and even older for that matter, I think we can sort of understand some of what's happening through what some people like Alan Berkowitz and others have called kind of a social norms approach, and that one of the biggest predictors of our own behavior is how we perceive how others in our social group think and act. And so many men, I think, don't accept or personally, you know, would find repulsive the idea that I can behave in a way that that somehow puts women down, or that I can mm-hmm. do something that, you know, mm-hmm. that I can make jokes about rape and sexual assault. You know, most men find that repulsive. But at the same time, men may also think that they may overestimate the extent to which they think other men think that kind of behavior is acceptable.
Oh, that's interesting.
And if we overestimate that and we think that other men think that that sort of thing is acceptable, then that changes how we may respond. We may respond when somebody makes a joke about rape or sexual assault with silence. We may say nothing. We may leave that mask on. And I think that if we kind of understand that's something that social psychologists have called, what I'm going to go back to again, the bystander effect, mm-hmm. where something happens, we see something happening, we hear somebody make a joke, or we see the precursors to sexual assault happening, and we say and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that part of the issue to really challenge that becomes having these discussions, having these dialogues to help challenge those norms, to help give a voice to men. To, mm-hmm. to say that, you know, no, we this isn't how we really feel mm-hmm. about these kinds of issues.
Yeah,
and I think to add on to that, I think you know, that bystander effect, I see that constantly in the work that I do. I mean, so I can ask if you put 10 men in a room and I individually ask each one of them, Do you think saying out loud, that girl's an easy mark, she's wasted, is okay to say, that that's like a good thing or a bad thing? And mm-hmm. individually, I would be willing to bet, in my experience, like 7 or 8 out of 10 say, no, that sounds a little bit sketchy. It sounds a little bit not okay. When I ask the group of 10 men, all of a sudden their response changes. And it's, well, you know, I mean, like, it would depend, because they're performing for each other. And so what Joe's pointing out is that what we've been socialized to do, and mm-hmm. it makes sense in a lot of ways, is I'm putting on this front because I think that everyone else thinks like my fake front is. Like, I think that my mask is what everyone else is really thinking. But inside, they're actually thinking what I'm thinking, mm-hmm. which is that this is not necessary and I don't like it. And you asked about young men.
And breaking that down.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, why would we not start these conversations with 10-year-old boys instead of waiting until they're 18? Mm-hmm. You know, the problem with sexual assault on college campuses and sexual assault in the military, which are two areas that Senator McCaskill and others have focused on, we pick these environments because we have some controls over the people in them. Mm-hmm. We can do more training. We can monitor. We can research more effectively. But we are not going to solve the military or college sexual assault problems until we get this conversation into our grade schools and our middle schools, not necessarily about rape, mm-hmm. but about these ideas that facilitate it and further it, so that we're teaching young students when they're doing anti-bullying work, and most bullying, which manifests itself as sexual harassment, really, mm-hmm. Like what most high school and junior high school bullies are doing would qualify as sexual harassment in the workplace. We need to be building skills where they can practice those intervention techniques. How do mm-hmm. I say to my friend when he's doing something I don't like, that I don't like it, without him turning on me or being weird about it? Why not build those skills when I'm 10?
Yeah.
I would have loved that. That would have been helpful to me.
Gentlemen, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue our very good conversation here about sexual violence among men and how much of it is culturally related, environmentally related. We'll take your questions and phone calls, too, at 816-235-2888 or tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. We're talking about sexual violence perpetrated by men, how to deal with it, what's going on out in the country to address this issue. We're visiting with Dr. Joel Williams. He's a psychology professor at UMKC. And Jeff Buchholz, who's director of We End Violence Workshops. He's co-president of the San Diego Domestic Violence Council. He'll be speaking this evening at 6 in Pearson Auditorium at the Atterbury Student Success Center on UMKC's campus. You know, Jeff, you use theater to engage people in what you want them to learn. Why did you decide to act out these situations in the way that you do?
Because they're difficult topics. These are difficult conversations for mm-hmm. people to have. And I think when we can engage people in a multitude of ways, that it's more likely to resonate and hit home for some folks.
Yeah.
And I certainly think that the way that our culture sets up sexual assault and gender binaries and homophobia and things like that, that the way we do that is sometimes so absurd that it borders on the comical, not the outcomes being comical, but that the process itself is so ridiculous that when we really look at it, we go, this is almost laughable. It's so ridiculous. And so that gives, you know, satire, humor is another way of being able to access how people think about a topic. So,
yeah. Well, we have a clip here from one of your performances. Let's take a listen.
Sam Saunderson here with Fox 11 News. As always, Fox likes to be right on top of breaking news. Tonight, a special report. We're breaking a news story here, folks. Sexual violence is a problem. Yes, it's true, and we've got our hands on some groundbreaking research that provides solutions for how to prevent yourself from being attacked. For women to prevent sexual violence, they'll need to avoid excessive flirting, avoid moderate flirting, or just avoid any behavior that might be construed by someone as flirtational in nature. Make sure to travel in groups at all times. Don't trust men they don't know well. Don't trust men they know very well. Hell, maybe they just shouldn't trust men at all. Make sure to pay for their own expenses on dates so their partner does not interpret their actions as a transaction for which they now owe him sexual gratification. Oh, and this is very important. They should never dress in anything that might be thought of as sexy or attractive. I've just been informed that since most women are sexually assaulted wearing jeans or sweats, they shouldn't dress in anything that might be perceived of as unattractive either. Okay, well, nothing catches this reporter off guard. Maybe we should just try what they do in Afghanistan. Yeah, you know, it's a great idea. You know, maybe all women should wear that burqa thing like they do in Afghanistan. Yes, We will now have a rule that all women in the United States should wear burqas to keep themselves from being sexually assaulted. What? Seriously? this just in? It seems that Afghani women are also the victims of sexual violence, even with the damn burqa. Okay, forget the burqas then. How about women just not go out of their homes ever? All right? Yes, this is the new solution. We're just going to have women stay in their homes, locked up at all... What? In their homes? Oh, forget it.
What kind of feedback do you get from men and women on those skits, Jeff?
Laughter. Yeah. A lot of laughter.
That's pretty good. I
think the most common feedback I get is
you make the point.
Yeah, that it was an eye-opener for them about the way that we put all the onus on victims. You know, in that skit, I focus on you know, all the things we as a culture tell women to do. We don't tell men anything. And men are victims of sexual abuse and sexual assault and domestic violence. I mean, men are victims as well. And again, our acculturation, the process of building masculinity in our culture said that men are supposed to be strong and tough and powerful, mm-hmm. and therefore we can't be hurt. So male, that whole skit also helps me illuminate the idea that men have silenced ourselves around these topics. So we don't talk honestly about the way they've affected us in as victims or personally. And that we just constantly come after women. I mean, like, mm-hmm. you know, wear this, don't wear that. Well, why did you do that? I mean, and there's no other crime where this is the case. Like, if someone stole your TV, right? If someone steals your TV, you don't go, hey, my TV was stolen. They go, oh, well, what was it? Sony?
Yeah.
Bet that thing had a flat screen and a remote.
Yeah.
You were asking for it, bro.
Yeah, right.
Like, no one would say that.
Joel, what kind of prevention strategies have you come across or developed that make sense based on what we're talking about here?
Well, with prevention strategies that are most effective, I think, are strategies that do kind of what we just heard Jeff doing in the clip that we listened to, mm-hmm. and that they tackle rape myths head on. Mm-hmm. And the acceptance of common rape myths, I think, is one of the most common expressions of rape culture that we really see.
Well, she was drinking, so I thought she was sort of asking for sex, right?
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, or because of the way she was dressed, she was somehow indicating that she wanted to be sexually assaulted or raped. Mm-hmm. I mean, you tackle that head on. And I think effective prevention programs have to do that. But they also have to give men an outlet to talk about, you know, the fact that to be a man, to be, you know, masculinity, if we're going to have conversations about gender norms, that to be a man, I think, really means to be an active listener, mm-hmm. and to even say that to be a man means to be a helper. How do I help someone when I've been made aware that a problem exists, and mm-hmm. and to know that something like sexual violence and rape is a problem? How can I, as a man, help address this issue? So we appeal to men as helpers, I think.
So how do we reach everybody? How do we get the message out? I mean, sometimes you have a voluntary forum, and the people who maybe don't need to hear the message are the ones who show up. How do you get the message out?
You know, I'd argue that everybody needs to hear the message.
How does that happen? I mean,
well, that's challenging.
Yeah, right.
So one thing. So for example, at UMKC, what we're doing now. All incoming students, and this is pretty typical of what a lot of campuses get now. All incoming students are required to get some kind of training around these issues. We use an online video-based program that aims to educate students about things like consent, sexual assault, providing definitions of it, the prevalence of the issue, how to intervene as a bystander. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we couple that with programs like what Jeff's doing that kind of provide, you know, an in-person platform to expand the discussion, to make it a two-way dialogue, then we really create a lot of opportunities for, mm-hmm. for change. Some campuses now, and I think this is increasingly the case, some campuses now are making it mandatory for all students to attend, mm-hmm. you know, these kinds of discussion-based programs. And I think that's I think it's a great thing.
So you're in a growth industry right now, Jeff. Do I have that right?
Yes, unfortunately, yes. I mean, yes. Well, it is fortunate. Yeah. I mean, we are in an industry that, like I said, I mean, to your listeners, right? I mean, if there's a time to have this conversation with your sister, with your friend, with your coworker, when they say something that blames a victim, or when they say that men are all rape, I mean, when those this is it. This is the moment. Because if we double our efforts, we are already doing more now. I mean, if 5 years ago, what we're doing right now would have seemed to me almost impossible. I would never have believed 5 years ago you told me we would be where we are today, and we've got a long way to go. But everyone has a role to play in this, because when you think about it, when you say rape culture, in a sense, another way to think of it, and Jacqueline Friedman talks about this, is it's a license to operate for predators. Mm-hmm. Everyone at some point has played a role in that. Someone in your family has called a woman a name for being sexually active. Everyone has criticized a boy for not being strong. And instead of teaching a young man that strength can be active listening and compassion, that it has to be, you know, putting up a front and being tough. Like, everyone in our culture has at some point done this. And so if we're all conspiring to create the problem, it's on all of us to kind of conspire to undo it. And it's not as hard as it seems if we open ourselves up to saying, yeah, I'll find a space here and there to have the conversation.
America's culture of sexual violence is our topic. Our phone number, 816-235-2888. Let's go to some calls. And David from San Francisco. David, good morning.
Oh, yeah, morning. I was interested in the storylines that you're using. I was listening to another show this morning about sexual slavery. And that can be actually a huge problem, not only here in America, but around the world, and with refugees even. You know, as refugees come flooding into the country from someplace, they can get trapped with pimps and all sorts of problems. So educating people early, I'm wondering if you're dealing in multiple languages, if you're dealing with refugees as a storyline, how people get trapped in sexual slavery.
Who wants to grab that?
I can start. To answer your question, yes. There's a lot of overlap, I would agree, with that caller's assessment, and I think that that in some of our program and of our documentary films, we talk about that. We talk about immigrant communities, those and how people can be dehumanized, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if I learn to see you as less, hurting you gets easier. And so, you know, if I devalue someone because of their immigration status, or you know, as someone who's foreign and not normal, then hurting them gets easier. So we have conversations like that.
Yeah. Okay. Again, our number, 816-235-2888. You know, many women feel uncomfortable when they go to the hospital and they do the rape kit and realize that a male medical practitioner or a policeman is conducting the exam and the interview. What about law enforcement, medical personnel, and prosecutors? How do we educate them, Joa, to interact more appropriately with the victims out there?
Well, I think that's a really good question.
Yeah, and a big issue.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. It's a very big issue. There have been, I think, different approaches to training.
Yeah.
One of the best things we can do really is try to help educate these folks on what the experience is like. Mm-hmm. I mean, for lack of a better way of saying that. For the victims who come in,
because that doesn't help a woman want to go to the hospital or acknowledge something horrible's happened when you face that kind of set of barriers in front of you here.
Yeah, and those kinds of experiences are just an extension of the trauma that you've
That's
just experienced.
Exactly right. Has it gotten better?
Yes. I mean, law enforcement, prosecution, hospitals have all gotten infinitely better. I mean, though, when you're starting off at terrible, that's not necessarily, you know, it's an important growth,
but they're aware of the issue.
I mean, it depends on the community. You know, in a larger city like Kansas City, where you've got, you know, MOXA and a number of other organizations, the universities all doing outreach and education, you've got a lot more opportunity. You know, I work with the military a fair amount, and the investigators. So basically the CSIs in the Air Force, they were going through a training about being trauma informed, which is something that Joa specializes in, and this investigator who, I mean, you know, he's been a a crime investigator his whole life. He's probably like 50 years old. And he's saying to me, you know, they've been putting us through all this touchy-feely training. And he used some more colorful words to describe it. This touchy-feely training. And what they were teaching was compassion. They were they were teaching investigators, instead of when someone says, I didn't say no, that as an investigator, you don't say why, because that implies that you did something wrong, but instead you say, okay, what did you say? So he said he went through all this touchy-feely training. And so I asked him, like, how's that working out for you all? And he's like, absolutely frickin' fantastic. Because it turns out that when we're compassionate, we get better evidence. It turns out that when we're compassionate, we're actually able to collect information in a more thorough and complete fashion, that we don't silence the very people we need the most help from.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, we are out of time. There's so many more things I wanted to talk about here, but we're going to have to wrap this up. Jeff Buchholz is director of We End Violence Workshops. He speaks tonight at 6 before the game, Away from Violence with Jeff Buchholz at 6 in Pearson Auditorium on the UMKC campus. We also were joined by Dr. Joel Williams, who's a psychology professor at UMKC, director of the Stress and Trauma Evaluation and Prevention Science Lab. Thank you both very much for a good conversation. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.